So tonight now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to expand on the framework that we were building this morning, the idea that the ultimate reality is non-local. And this morning I explained to you that there are three ways of exploring the so-called reality. One is through the eyes of the flesh, which has its own methodology. The second is the eyes of the mind, which has its own logic and rationality. And the third is through the eye of soul, contemplation, meditation, the meditative disciplines. What happens is as you start to meditate and experience restful awareness, then very gradually that same thing that is being explained to you now intellectually on the level of the mind, through the eyes of the mind, that same thing becomes a knowingness that you can articulate yourself in your own language. And the process is gradual. Meditation allows us to have insights and epiphanies and experiences that make all this seem completely rational, logical, and at the same time experiential. We know it. Tonight what I want to do is intellectually explore with you first the reality of soul and spirit, secondly the qualities of soul and spirit, and thirdly the different levels of the quantum mechanical body. So of course every spiritual tradition, every wisdom tradition throughout our planet has acknowledge the existence of something that's called soul or spirit. The body, the physical body, is a field of information and energy that we experience as molecules, solid, three-dimensional, in space and time. The mind is the same field of information and energy which we experience as our thoughts and feelings and emotions. And now, even from science, we know that thoughts, feelings, emotions manifest as molecules. The two are different ways of looking at the same thing. The physical body is experienced objectively. I can see it, I can touch it, I can experience it through my senses. So it's the objective experience of information and energy expressed as matter. The subjective experience of information and energy is the mind, where we experience thoughts, feelings, emotions, desires, memories. But the two are exactly the same thing. Information and energy, one on a quantum mechanical level and the second on a material level. And what's the soul? The soul is the source of information and energy. And what's the spirit? It's the source of the soul. We'll discuss these different levels in a few moments. So the soul is the source of information and energy. And by the way, the only difference between information and intelligence is that self-referral quality that I spoke about. So anytime I say information, you can also substitute intelligence, because we're speaking about intelligence. So the soul is the source of that. In other words, the soul is the thinker of thoughts. The mind is a field of thoughts. The soul is where the thoughts come from. The one who has the thoughts. So I'm not my thoughts, I'm the one who has thoughts. I had all kinds of thoughts this morning, then I had different kinds of thoughts a few minutes later. They're changing. There's a Vedic expression that says, thoughts are like guests. They check in and they check out. Okay? But you're always there. You're the container of thoughts from where they come. The source. You're always there. You're the thinker of the thought. Physical reality is manufactured or created in the brain. The brain and the receptors of the brain, smell receptors, taste receptors, etc., they are like transducers. They take energy, which is electromagnetic essentially, or mechanical, and they then transduce it into a sensory experience. That outside, in the real world out there, there aren't things. What really exists is this quantum soup of energy and information. And the brain converts that soup by selecting a few frequencies into the experience of material reality. For example, let's try and make this simple. Right now in this room, right now in this space that we are, CNN News is here right now. There's all kinds of music on different kinds of FM stations. There are millions of cellular conversations going on in this atmosphere. There are fax messages being sent back and forth. In fact, in the very space that we are in, the space, even though it seems silent, it seems there's nothing happening in this, the space that we are in is the most turbulent, chaotic field of activity. It's full of infinity of information and energy. But it's not part of our sensory experience. And the reason it isn't is that we're not tuning in to those frequencies. Our nervous system doesn't tune into those frequencies, at least in our ordinary waking state of consciousness. Now, there might be other states of consciousness where it tunes in. And what we ingest as material experience is what our senses, what our sensory apparatus is tuned into. In fact, scientists will tell you that right this moment, your nervous system is taking in less than 1/1,000,000,000 of what's existing around us at the moment, in reality, even on a sensory level. Your nervous system cannot take in more than 5 to 9 pieces of information at the same time. So most of you are not consciously aware of your naked skin touching your clothes, but now that I bring it to your attention, you might become aware of it. Or of the weight of your body on these chairs, or of your breathing, or of the sounds in this environment. And yet, at some level, your spirit is in constant surveillance. It is actually aware of those things. And if any of that were to change or become abnormal, you would immediately sense it. But in the interests of economy, of expenditure, of energy, you just edit out everything that's not necessary for you at this moment, which doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There's an interpreter somewhere that knows the difference, that even though she's experiencing this on the material level, she knows that in reality she's not there, she's in surgery. He said there's an interpreter behind the scenes. All the brain does, all the sensory apparatus does, it converts one form of energy into another form of energy. So right now, I'm speaking words, right? And these words are what? Mechanical energy. They vibrate. It's my breath that is vibrating. And it's producing some vibration in the atmosphere. That vibration in the atmosphere is causing a mechanical vibration of your eardrum. The mechanical vibration of your eardrum is converted into some electrical vibration in the auditory nerve that creates some chemical change in your brain. And you're suddenly understanding what I'm saying. But let's say I was speaking Swahili, then you wouldn't understand what I'm saying, unless you happen to speak Swahili. Now, therefore, there's an interpreter out there. The brain, all it does is convert one energy into another form of energy. That's all. Who's interpreting this? That's the soul, the interpreter of that energy. Because all the brain is an instrument, a transducer that transfers one form of energy into another energy. Of course, the brain tells the body what to do. But who tells the brain what to do? Neither the choice maker nor the interpreter can be found in the brain or in the body. You can take a carbon atom, you can put it into a sugar molecule. You can inject the sugar molecule into the body. You can trace it as it's consumed by the brain through positron emission tomography, PET scans, all kinds of technology, you can track a thought in the brain. But the question still remains, whose thought? Who's thinking? And where is this person? You cannot find it in the brain or in the body. So the real me is an interpreter and a choice maker, because every thought that I have and every thought that you have is either an interpretation or a choice. There are no other kinds of thoughts. No other kinds of thoughts. Only two kinds of thoughts. Every thought that you have is either an interpretation or a choice. So you are an interpreter, a choice maker. I am an interpreter and choice maker. We can't find this person inside the brain or the body. Why can't you find me inside the brain or the body? The answer to that may be very simple. The reason you can't find me inside my body is because I'm not in it. So these days, if you go to a good bookstore, go to the metaphysics section, you'll find lots of books on so-called out-of-body experiences, when the real mystery is, how do we get an in-body experience? Because technically speaking, we're not in it. And the best way to try and understand this is possibly through an analogy. And I've used this analogy before. Imagine you're listening to Beethoven on the radio, and you tear the radio apart, hoping to find Beethoven inside the radio. Not going to find him there. Why? Because he's not in it. The radio is an instrument that traps a non-local field of energy and information into a space-time event. Once again, a space-time event is any event that occupies a location in space and exists in time. It has a beginning, a middle, and an ending. So you tune into the radio and you now say, oh, here's the symphony. But where was the symphony before you tuned in? It was there in space, right? Any particular location in space?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. And because it's everywhere, then it's for ever. Because space is a way of measuring time, and time is a way of measuring space. That's why we call it a space-time continuum. That's what the Vedantists call the Akashic record. Maybe you've heard that term, the Akashic record. The Akash is the space. Okay, and in that space is everything that's ever existed and the potentiality of everything that will ever exist. This is from that Akash, from that space, that matter is created through the five elements, space, air, fire, water and earth. It comes from that quantum mechanical universe which is right here. All that has ever existed is here. Right now. In fact, there's a Vedantic expression which says, if it's not here right now, it never was. And it never will be. But if it's here now, then it always was and always will be. So that's the immeasurable potential of all that was, is and will be, is right here in the space that we're in the Akash. And before you trap it, it's there. Non-local. If the radio is in New York City, then the symphony is in New York City. If the radio is in Khartoum in Sudan, then that's where the symphony is. If it's on the moon, that's where the symphony is. If it's another galaxy, 100 million light years away, then that's where you'll trap it. But that's just an artifact. It's just the instrument that creates that artifact. In reality, it's everywhere. Omnipresent. And as energy, it's everywhere. Omnipotent energy is everywhere. Information is everywhere. Omniscient. So, the scientists of consciousness have said the soul is non-local. And if you say, if I'm not in the body, then where am I? The answer to that question is, it's the wrong question. Because as soon as you say where, you imply a location in space to something that doesn't occupy space. I mean, where is CNN News in this space? Does it occupy space? Well, it doesn't really occupy space. In fact, the same space that CNN occupies can be occupied by BBC. or by All India Radio, or by a microwave, or by an X-ray, or by a gamma wave, or by a cosmic ray. They can all occupy the same space. And they don't displace each other. Why? Because they're beating at different frequencies. So, Vedantists and explorers of consciousness using the eye of soul have said the same thing about soul. They say, you are the unconditioned spirit that's trapped in conditions. You manifest through this body, just like the symphony manifests through the radio. That doesn't mean you are the body. It just means that you're using the body to establish a line of communication. Just like when you call your friend on the phone, you use AT&T. And if somebody cuts off the line, AT&T, that doesn't mean you don't exist anymore. It just means you've lost the line of communication. Maybe you try MCI then. So too, the body is a line of communication for that non-local field of intelligence, which for the moment we're referring to as soul. The thinker of the thought, the interpreter, and the choice maker, non-local. And the window to that is through the silent spaces between our thoughts. The space between our thoughts is where we actually manufacture the thought. So let's say, here's a thought, chocolate ice cream. Here's another thought, what's the meaning of life? And here's another thought, I want to spend my vacation in Jamaica. Between this thought, chocolate ice cream, this thought, what's the meaning of life? And this thought, vacation in Jamaica, is the thinker of the thought. The thinker of the thought is in the space between thoughts, because that's where you manufacture the thought. Even as I'm speaking to you right now, I'm manufacturing thoughts. The I, the me, that is manufacturing these thoughts, is in the space between thoughts. So, the thinker is in the space between thoughts. And there are at least two qualities to it. There are many qualities. But let's address only two right now. It's silent, and it's also a field of infinite possibilities. Silent, because it has to be silent. The thought is manufactured in the silence. As soon as it's manufactured, then there's no longer thinker, there's thought. So it's manufactured in the silence. And two, it's a field of infinite possibilities, because between this thought, chocolate ice cream, and this thought, what's the meaning of life, is the possibility of any thought. Why did I wear green socks this morning? Where's that thought before you have it? It exists in that field of infinite possibilities as pure potentiality. In other words, that silent field is not just a void, even though it's silent, it's pregnant with possibilities. It's a field of pure potentiality. It's full of possibilities, infinite possibilities. Between this thought and this thought is the possibility of any thought. So, the interpreter, the choice maker that creates these thoughts is a silent field of infinite possibilities in the space between thoughts. So, I'm a silent field of infinite possibilities as interpreter and choice maker, and you're a silent field of infinite possibilities as interpreter and choice maker. So what's the difference between you and me? There is no difference, and yet there is a difference. There is no difference because we are all that field of pure potentiality. In reality, there's only one mind. This big cosmic consciousness, or that ultimate ground of creation that we are going to explore in a little while. So there's only one mind, but yet there are different minds, because even though we are all fields of infinite possibilities, we don't all have the same thoughts. We have different thoughts. So, even though this is a field of infinite possibilities, it has what is called a certain probability amplitude. These are terms I'm using from quantum physics because they really explain the nature of reality. Einstein called the field a continuum. When he talked about the ultimate field, he said the field is not a model for space-time events, it's a model for probability amplitudes that create space-time events. A probability amplitude is that which defines the statistical likelihood of a space-time event. I'll define that again. A probability amplitude is that which defines the statistical likelihood of a space-time event. So let's say I look at a snowstorm and I get the idea I'm going to go to India. I don't like snowstorms. You look at the same snowstorm and you get the idea I'm going to go skiing. Somebody else looks at the same snowstorm and gets the idea I'm going to make a snowman and play with my children. Again, infinite possibilities, different probabilities. So this gap between thoughts, even though it has infinite possibilities, there's a statistical likelihood of a certain space-time event. And that probability amplitude, or that statistical likelihood of space-time events, is created by karma. Karma is past action or past experience. So if I have a cup of coffee, any action, that's a karmic episode. That's karma. Any action is karma. And action or karma creates memory. And memory becomes the potentiality for desire. Now the Sanskrit term, since we're introducing a few of these days, the Sanskrit term for memory is sanskara. And the Sanskrit term for desire is vasana. Desire creates the possibility of karma again. You have this cup of coffee, now you know what it tastes like, that's the memory. And if you like it, then that becomes a desire, you want to have it again. So, you go to wherever and buy a cup of cappuccino, that's karma again. Karma, memory and desire are the software of the soul. And that's what creates the difference between you and me. The reason we are different, if we are different, is because of our past. Our past actions, our past episodes, our experiences of life. We're different because we've had different experiences in our past. We've walked through different gardens, we've knelt at different graves, we've met different people, we've heard different songs, we've read different books, watched different movies. And we've metabolized every little wisp of experience that has come our way, and we've created the software of our souls. That's what the soul is. It's the seed of memory, karma, and desire. Now, if you look at this, then you also will recognize that actually every memory is the basis for interpretation. So interpretation is sanskara, or memory. Every interpretation is a memory. And every desire becomes the basis of choice. And we said earlier that the real you is an interpreter and a choice maker. And that every thought that you have is either an interpretation or a choice. And it comes from karma. Which means that we don't consciously think our thoughts. That's why when you say to somebody, think only positively, you're really doing them a disservice. Because nobody thinks consciously. Thoughts come spontaneously, just like we don't breathe consciously. You can breathe consciously, as we will do during the pranayama exercises, but that's an exercise. If you breathe consciously all the time, you'll get totally fatigued. And so too, if you think consciously all the time, you'll get totally fatigued. You might become exasperatingly positive as well. So, which would be extremely artificial. Thoughts are karmically generated. One thought comes after another, after another, after another. And how does it happen? It happens through association. Memory creates desire, creates memory, creates another memory through desire, memory. They all connect with each other. As soon as you have a thought, it becomes necessary for you to create another thought. Just understand that every thought spontaneously leads to another thought through association. Which means the thought that you just had was the result of the previous thought, which was the result of a previous thought, which was the result of a previous thought, ad infinitum, goes through your childhood, intrauterine life, And once we understand this model, it goes through other lifetimes. It goes through the dawn of creation, which means it takes the whole universe to conspire to create that last thought that you had. The whole universe conspired to create that last thought, because thoughts are also context-bound. Our personal history, our racial history, our mythical background, historical background, the whole of civilization, karmically generated thoughts. This is the software of the soul. And as you explore this software, then you see that there are this karmic software, which is very personal, but then there is deeper levels of karma and deeper levels of memory and deeper levels of memory right to the mechanics of creation. So the soul has many layers. The most superficial layer of the soul in Sanskrit is called jiva, or the personality. It's beyond the ego, and we'll discuss again in a short moment the difference between ego and jiva. It's the basis of personality. You know, you have a newborn child. How many people have seen or had experience with a newborn child? Okay. Does a newborn child have a personality? Absolutely. You take twins, same DNA, right? Same identical twins have the same DNA. Do they have the same personality? No. Even a newborn baby has a personality. That's jiva. There's a deeper level of soul, which is called Atman, which is the witness of the jiva. Which is the witness of the jiva. And then there's a deeper level, which is spirit, which is also called Brahman, which is the witness of the Atman. So there's Brahman, there's Atman, there's jiva, and there's ahankar, which is ego. All these are different levels of differentiation of that same primordial intelligence. And at the deepest level, there is only one primordial intelligence, which is called Brahman, which we are, for our practical purposes, we're calling spirit. So now, having identified soul and spirit, let's for a few minutes discuss the qualities of spirit, some of the qualities, we can't discuss all of them, and then explain how that manifests at these different levels of existence. The first understanding is, since spirit is the deepest level of existence, you know, there's matter, there's energy, there's transformation, there's information, and there's the source of information. Everything comes from that level. It's also called the unified field. We'll discuss the relationship of spirit to unified field in a few moments as well. But the first thing to understand is, if by spirit we mean the underlying intelligence, the ultimate ground, spirit is everything. It's the source of matter, it's the source of energy, it's the source of information. It's everything. The mind is an expression of spirit, the body is an expression of spirit, and this physical world that we are seeing with our eyes and perceiving through our senses is also spirit. It's everything. There's a Vedic expression, I am that, you are that, all this is that, that's all there is. And if you really, really, really get that, then there's absolutely nothing more to say for the rest of this course. Thanks for coming. Good night. In reality, everything is spirit. The second insight is, as the spirit moves from the unmanifest, which is unmanifest, invisible, into the manifest, into the visible, it does so in such a way that the whole is contained in every part. The whole is contained in every part. It's a very important point. In other words, the spirit manifests holographically. And I think these days it's very important to understand this holographic paradigm, because scientists are exploring it in the world of technology, in the world of neuroscience, in the world of philosophy. People are talking about holograms, holons, holographic models, just about to explain everything that exists in the world of information and energy. So you probably have seen a hologram in the Science Museum or in Disney World, or at least on your MasterCard or Visa. A hologram is a three-dimensional projection of information and energy. So let's say you want to make a hologram of me. This is me. The way you do it is you take a laser beam. A laser beam is a beam of light that has only one frequency, and you put it through an instrument called a beam splitter. It splits the beam into two beams, an object beam and a reference beam. The object beam comes at the object. It gets scattered. The reference beam is bounced off a mirror and interferes with the scattered object beam. It creates an interference pattern which you can record on a photographic plate. When you can develop that, you have the beginnings of your hologram. If you look at it, it makes just a bunch of wiggles and squiggles. But now the magic begins. You take that interference pattern, you put a laser beam through it, and you get a three-dimensional projection of the original object out there in space-time. And if the hologram is well made, then you can't tell the difference between me and my hologram. If this was a hologram giving this lecture, you wouldn't know the difference. Maybe it is a hologram. We already have the technology to make perfect holograms of ourselves. And please listen carefully. In 2-3 years, we'll have the technology to fax these holograms anywhere we want. So you can simultaneously show up in different places at the same time. And then people will wonder which one is the real you. Which is a mystery right now. Which one is the real you? Because there are lots of yous in this physical body. Lots of yous. All kinds of different archetypal energies. So there's something very mysterious and wonderful about these holograms. If you take a scissors and you cut that up into a million bits or a billion bits or a trillion bits, and you take the teeniest, weeniest bit of it, put a laser beam through it, and you'll get all of me all over again. So a hologram cannot be destroyed. It's immortal. And all of it is in every bit of it. That's why it's called a hologram. The whole is contained in every part. And what scientists are telling us, first of all, they're telling us many things. These are fantastic discoveries. First of all, that memory is holographically present in all the cells of our body. That every experience you've ever had is recorded, not only in your brain, but in your body, in every cell of your body, holographically. Everything that you've ever experienced. And since the real you cannot be squeezed into the volume of a body or the span of a lifetime, these memories go back eons of time. But there are not just personal memories, there are impersonal memories, which means memories of the race, memories of the species, memories of other species. Scientists tell us that there are parts of the brain known as the amphibian brain, the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain. But what these new scientists are telling us is not just the brain. We have amphibian, reptilian memories of everything that's in creation right here. The karmic software of the universe is contained in every cell of our body. Which means that if we really understood how to tap into this inner intelligence, we would eavesdrop on the cosmic mind, on the mind of God. It's right here inside us. By knowing this, we can know everything. And that's one of the greatest principles of Ayurveda. That not only do you get to learn about your body and your subtle body and your consciousness, but by knowing it, you understand the mechanics of the Creator. The creation itself in the atom is the whole universe. In the microcosm is the whole macrocosm. In the human body is the whole cosmic body. In the human mind is the whole cosmic mind. That's the famous expression, yatha pidde tatha brahmande. As is the atom, so is the universe. Many good descriptions of this in the visionary poetry of people like William Blake, in Vedanta, in the Rig Veda, there's a hymn, in Indra's heaven, there's a set of pearls so contained that if you pick up one of them, you'll see all of them. Or William Blake in one of his poems says, to see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, eternity in an hour. holographic descriptions present all over in all the traditions of the world. And that's why as we explore these different layers, we are not only exploring ourselves, we are exploring the whole universe which is contained here and is projecting from this field of consciousness. In fact, the universe, according to some scientists, is nothing other than a holographic videotape of the spirit. Three-dimensional holographic videotape. The third principle is that spirit, as it manifests, it vibrates at different levels, at different frequencies. That the spirit is vibratory in its expression. The spirit in its essential state is the field from where all vibrations come. But then there are many different levels of vibration. So the vibration that we are most familiar with is that which we call physical reality, the densest vibration, the solid. But then there's another vibration, we call it liquid. There's another vibration, we call it gaseous. There's another vibration, we call it quantum mechanical. And that quantum mechanical has so many levels of existence. Microwaves and cosmic rays and X-rays and gamma rays, all these are part of the vibratory field. Our thoughts are a certain kind of vibration, our emotions are a different kind of vibration, our physical body is a different kind of vibration, and the universe that we experience is a different kind of vibration. But they're all different vibrations of the spirit simultaneously coexisting. And therefore, there are many dimensions of existence. And I'll explore these in a few moments. The physical, the astral, the subtle, the causal. They're all actually simultaneously coexisting, these dimensions. Because just like, you know, CNN doesn't displace BBC, they can occupy the same space. They're just vibrating as different frequencies of information and energy. And it depends on the vibration that our receptors are tuned into that we experience a certain reality. But the expression in the Yoga Vashishta is infinite worlds come and go in the vast expanse of consciousness. Infinite worlds simultaneously coexisting. The fourth principle of spirit is that it is constantly undergoing transformation. Never stops. Constantly undergoing transformation, never stops. So anything that appears to be non-changing is an illusion. Our physical body, for example, you know, it appears to be non-changing. When I look at you, I don't see that change. The fact that 98% of your atoms that you have right now weren't there a year ago. That your physical body is constantly changing and very rapidly changing, actually. In 1 year, completely replaced itself. Your emotions, feelings, thoughts, desires are changing. The physical environment is changing. It's constantly and ever in transformation. Non-change is an illusion. The only non-change is the source, the potentiality for change. It's a very important principle because what we call health is a dynamic non-change in the midst of change. That's what balances. My blood sugar remains between 70 and 110. It remains in that range. My blood pressure remains between 80 and 120. My heart rate remains between 70 and 80 basal rate. So there's a dynamic non-change in the midst of change. That's what balances. But the change is not a static non-change. It's in that field of transformation. And all the strategies we'll discuss for maintaining balance are understanding this principle. The fifth principle is that the field has coexisting, opposing energies. That our soul is actually made up of opposing archetypal energies. For everything that exists in us, its exact opposite also exists. On a simple level, it's says that these archetypal energies that stoke the furnace of life are competing with each other. You look within yourself, that's what you'll find. The divine and the diabolical at the same time. The sacred and the profane at the same time. So the Vedic expression is, the sinner and the saint are merely exchanging notes. Of course, Oscar Wilde once said, the only difference between a sinner and a saint is that the saint has a past and the sinner has a future. So, it's really important to understand that these opposing energies are simultaneously present. So, in health is the potentiality for disease. And in disease is the potentiality for perfect health. Whatever exists in the body, its opposite is contained as potentiality. Whatever state exists, its opposite is contained. So, you know, this is a new concept for a lot of people. Because when we say there is this imbalance that we call cancer, or this imbalance that we call heart disease, in medicine, the concept of reversibility is not there. It's coming now. There is some evidence in medicine that these diseases are reversible. You know, heart disease is reversible. That cancer can have a complete remission. Or any disease has its exact opposite in the state of balance. That's a very basic principle because we are understanding that consciousness is infinitely flexible and contains polars, opposites. And actually life is a constant back and forth between these states. Pleasure and pain, hot and cold, up and down, disease and well-being, imbalance and perfect balance. The potentiality for both is always there in that field of infinite dynamism, infinite flexibility. The sixth quality of soul or spirit is that in its primordial state, the energy of spirit is also a sexual energy. Because sexual energy is the creative energy of the universe. Anything that's alive is alive because of this life-bestowing energy. So in plants and animals, this energy serves only one function, which is biological reproduction. But in human beings, we can take the same sexual energy, because it is the creative energy, we can transform it into all kinds of creative activities. In fact, even sexual experience can be a means to enlightenment, creativity, vision, and that which is sacred. The peak experiences of sexuality, therefore, can give us some insights. There's a whole division of Vedanta, there's a whole discipline of Vedanta called Tantra, which deals with how we use that energy for creativity and for enlightenment. So the peak experiences of sexuality, otherwise known as orgasm, may give us some insight into the mechanics of how spirit works. So in orgasm, there is a sense of timelessness. There's a loss of ego. There's complete naturalness. Unless, of course, you're faking it. There is surrender. There is defenselessness. There is communion. So please note, the peak experience of sexuality is one that is characterized by these features. Timelessness, loss of ego, naturalness, surrender, defenselessness, communion. Please note those qualities, because those are the qualities of spirit, which you spontaneously get in any peak experience. I just chose the orgasmic experience right now, because it is a biological experience of unity consciousness, where the lover and the beloved become one. But here is insight into how spirit works. The next insight about spirit, the seventh quality of spirit, is that its intelligence is non-linear. It's contextual, it's relational, it's holistic, it's intuitive, It is nourishing. It is wise. It does not behave in a win-lose manner. It is outside the realm of linear cause and effect. So the intelligence of spirit is always contextual and holistic. The eighth quality of spirit is that it manifests in seasons, in cycles, in rhythms. And we will see the connection of that to our own biological rhythms. A state of balance is one where the biological rhythms of the body are in complete harmony with the rhythms of the universe. And when the body's rhythms are in complete harmony with the rhythms of the universe, then biological intelligence or the intelligence of the universe flows through us in a very effortless and spontaneous manner. And when that happens, then we feel energy and joy and creativity and good health. Good health is the perfect alignment or harmony of the rhythms in our body with the rhythms of the cosmos. Because spirit functions through these cycles, these rhythms, these seasons. The ninth quality of spirit is that it expresses itself as different states of awareness. It expresses itself because spirit in its essence is awareness itself. Spirit in its essence is pure awareness. But as it expresses itself into our physiology, it expresses at different states of awareness. We'll go through them. But tonight I'll just list these states of awareness, the common states of awareness. So deep sleep is one state of awareness. We know what that is. We've all experienced it, hopefully. The second state of awareness is dreams. The third state of awareness is waking state of awareness. And this is what 99% of humanity goes through. Waking, dreaming, sleeping. Waking, dreaming, sleeping. Not having any idea that there are other states of awareness that we can explore through the eyes of soul. The fourth state of awareness is glimpsing the soul. The fifth state of awareness is cosmic consciousness. The sixth state of awareness is divine or God consciousness. And if you don't like those words, you can call it refined cosmic consciousness. And the seventh state of awareness is unity consciousness. So there are seven very distinct states of awareness through which spirit manifests itself. Once again, deep sleep, dreams, waking, glimpsing the soul, cosmic consciousness, divine consciousness, unity consciousness. And the principle to understand is each state of awareness creates its own physiology. And as a result of creating its own physiology, it creates its own ability of knowingness. Each state of awareness creates its own physiology and its own state of knowingness. For example, in deep sleep, how much awareness do you have? Very little, but there is a state of awareness because you respond to stimuli. In deep sleep, if I come and scream at you and tell you, get up, there's a fire in the house, you respond to that. So at some level, you're aware. You respond to stimuli. In dreams, there's an increasing repertoire of experience. In waking, even more repertoire of experience. Glimpsing the soul more, etc., etc. We are expanding our awareness as we go to these higher states of consciousness. And each state creates its own physiology, which means that the blood pressure is different during sleep as compared to dreams, as compared to waking, the metabolism is different. The brain waves are different. The biochemistry is different. Each state of awareness creates its own physiology. And therefore a different style of functioning of the nervous system and receptors, and therefore a different reality. In other words, reality is a function of the state of awareness that you're in. The reality you experience in dreams is not the same as the reality you experience in deep sleep, which is not the same as experience in waking. But as you learn about these other states of consciousness, you find there are so many other levels of reality, which are completely different from waking state. Therefore, the waking state is not more real than any of the other states. It's not more real. Each state creates its own reality. The dream is as real as the waking state. And so is the deep sleep. But so is glimpsing the soul. So is cosmic consciousness. They each create their own reality. We will discuss those realities. The tenth quality of spirit is that it uses attention and intention for transformation. Spirit doesn't use rational thought for transformation. Spirit uses attention and intention for transformation. Attention is energy and intention is information. Whatever you put your attention on, it goes stronger. Whatever you take your attention away from, disintegrates. Physiologically. And intention organizes its own fulfillment. Because intention has infinite organizing power. Which means intention can orchestrate an infinity of space-time events in order to bring about the intended outcome. The whole universe is information and energy. Attention and intention are the keys to that universe of information and energy. The 11th quality of spirit is that in its pure essence, it is also the experience of love. And we will discuss the experience of love not as a mere sentiment, not as a mere emotion, but as the ultimate truth of the heart of creation, which is the knowingness that you and I are not only made up of the same stuff, but we are actually the same being, the same spirit in different disguises. So love is a state of consciousness. And the spirit in its essence is that, love. The 12th quality of spirit is that it's self-referral. I spoke to you about self-referral as a feedback loop. It learns from its own experience. And then it modifies its behavior and expresses itself. It continues to evolve. The conscious evolution of spirit continues to evolve into higher levels of abstraction, creativity, unpredictability. The 13th quality of spirit is it's self-protective. Self-protective or self-maintaining. And that's what we call homeostasis or balance. It has a tendency to maintain balance. So the physical body spontaneously has a tendency to maintain its intrinsic state of balance, unless we interfere with that. And that is what is called homeostasis or healing. It's the self-protective quality of spirit. And the 14th quality of spirit is its self-organizing. Self-organizing in that it has in it, contained in it, infinite organizing power. Infinite organizing power means it can organize an infinity of things and connect them to each other. The human body is a perfect example of that. A human body can think thoughts and play a piano and kill germs and remove toxins, make a baby all at the same time. That takes a lot of organization. And whilst it's doing that, it tracks the movement of stars. So that takes a lot of organization too. It literally orchestrates an infinity of things all at the same time and organizes them and connects them with each other. So those are approximately 14 qualities. You know, it's an ongoing journey to explore each of these qualities. But as we explore these qualities experientially, then we'll know more and more about the healing process. And during this week, we will be exploring a lot of these qualities of the Spirit. So now let's talk about the third component of this evening's talk. Having understood that that's what spirit is. We've talked about spirit. It's the underlying ground, ultimate intelligence. Now let's see how it expresses itself. But now let's address these different levels of existence of the spirit. So the first level of existence is the material level. The physical body. And the physical body is made up of matter and energy. We know that, both from common sense, that matter and energy are essentially the same thing. You can take energy, convert it into matter. You can take matter and convert it into energy. Now, in Sanskrit, these two layers of the physical body, and you don't have to remember these terms, but they will be used again and again, and they give you some insight. The material body in Sanskrit is called Anna Maya Kosha, these three words. The word Anna means food. Maya, in this case, means full of, but it also means the illusion of non-change, but in fact changing. So Maya is a sheet, illusory sheet. Kosha means sheet also. So the physical body is derived from food. It gives us the illusion of non-change, but it's changing. And that's one of the levels of existence, the sheet or layer. And the physical body is derived from energy, and that is called prana maya kosha. The word prana means biological energy. If today you went to a scientist and you said, what are the different kinds of energies in the universe? The scientist would tell you there are four kinds of energies in the universe. And only four kinds of energy. The first energy in the universe is electromagnetic energy. So when you see something, what you're seeing is electromagnetic energy bouncing off the object of your experience. Okay, electromagnetic energy includes the visible light, which starts from violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange, red. That's the visible spectrum. So now before violet, there's something called ultraviolet. And before ultraviolet is a spectrum of energy called gamma rays. Before that is a spectrum of energy called cosmic rays and X-rays. And then on the other side is infrared, microwaves and radio waves or television waves. So that's it. That's the electromagnetic spectrum. It's surrounding us. The whole universe is permeated by that. The second energy in the universe is what is called gravity. You know, everybody knows at least a little bit what gravity is. It's what makes the Earth spin on its own axis, makes the Earth go around the sun. It holds the planets together and makes the world go around. It holds our bodies together also. It's this mysterious force between material bodies. The third kind of energy is called strong forces. Strong forces are the forces that hold the nucleus of an atom together. So when you look at an atom and there's a nucleus inside it, that nucleus is not a solid thing. It's just these forces that are so concentrated that they create this appearance of nucleus. But they're concentrated forces. And when you disrupt those forces, you get a nuclear explosion. That's why it's called the strong force. And then there's another force, the fourth force, which is called the weak interaction. It's not really weak, it's weak compared to the strong force. This is responsible for the arrangement of the subatomic particles. Remember, there's an atom which has a nucleus and then all these subatomic particles that are moving at lightning speeds around it. And they're all fluctuations of energy and information, and the arrangement is the so-called weak force. And scientists tell us, that's it. It's quite convenient. There are no other kinds of energies. That the whole universe is made up of these four energies. And it is the combination of these four energies that creates all material things. Our physical bodies come from there, our thoughts come from there, stars and moon and galaxies come from there, and the whole universe is permeated by this energy. Scientists also tell us that these four energies actually are coming from one field, and that one field is called the unified field. So the universe is an energy field. Now the difference between scientists and Vedantists, we consider ourselves Vedantists, students of consciousness or scientists of consciousness, Vedantists say this is not just an energy field, it's a conscious energy field. It thinks. It thinks. It's conscious. And that conscious energy field is the unified field. It's really important to understand these forces because these forces are present right here where we are. And where are they? They're in the space that we are. This is the primordial essence of everything in creation. This space where we are. You can't destroy this space. You can destroy this room. You can destroy these walls. You can destroy this roof. You can destroy these bodies. But you cannot destroy this space. The first element of creation. It's from where everything comes. And in fact, it's the silent witness of all that was, is, and will be. Akash. The Akashic record also. And we have access to this because we too, in our essential state, are that space. And the space between our thoughts, and the space between these objects, and the space between breaths, and the space between movement is all ultimately the same space. That is energy and matter, the physical body in space-time. Then beyond that physical body is something which is called the astral body. The astral body is the exact counterpart of the physical body. But it's vibrating at a different frequency. It survives the death of the physical body. And you might like to conceptualize it as the ghost of the physical body. It has organs, it has heart, it has everything, but vibrating at a different level, different frequency. The exact counterpart of the physical body, but vibrating at a different frequency, you might say. Electromagnetic. What survives the death of the astral body? The subtle body. The subtle body, which is made up of mind, intellect, and ego. The physical body exists in space and time. The subtle body, astral body also exists in space and time, because it has a beginning, a middle, and an ending. But the subtle body exists only in time. It doesn't occupy any space. In fact, the astral body and the physical body are contained in the subtle body, which exists only in time, doesn't occupy space. It's therefore now approaching a degree of non-locality. It contains mind, intellect, and ego. Mind is where we experience emotions, feelings, intellect, where we experience ideas, concepts and beliefs, which are ideas that we hold to be true. And then ego, which is our self-image. And it's created through a process called object referral. Object referral means you refer to an object and you identify with the object. So if you ask somebody on the street, who are you? I don't think they'll say, I'm a holographic expression of the entire universe, which is manifesting as a continuum of probability amplitudes for space-time events in a field of infinite possibilities, which is technically a good description of who you really are. So you ask somebody, who are you? Then they start to name the objects of their experience. I am male. I am US citizen. I own this house. I drive this car, I have this relationship, etc. So we collect objects, we relinquish our identity to the object, and we create an idea. And that idea is our self-image, it's our ego. In the sacrifice of the spirit for the ego is the birth of time. Because time is the continuity of memory which uses the ego or the self-image as an internal reference point. If you break the barrier of time, then you enter the level of soul. And soul is now here beyond space-time, because it's eternal, and it has the seeds of karmic software, memory, desire, and karma. And actually, the three are identical, because without karma, there's no memory. Without memory, there's no desire. So it's the source of thought. And then beyond the soul is that field that we've been discussing with those 14 characteristics that we spoke about, which is the spirit. So think of spirit as this ocean, and think of soul as the waves on the ocean. They're no different. The waves are the ocean. They just appear to be individualized. But there's no real difference. The wave is the ocean. The ocean is also the wave. And in fact, this whole thing is conceptual. The whole manifestation is conceptual, because it's spirit that conceptualizes, conceives, constructs, governs, and then becomes all these levels. It's different degrees of manifestation through that self-interacting dynamics of spirit or the unified field. So if you're a scientist, you might say that the universe has these different levels of existence. Matter fields, energy fields, transformation fields. This is where the transformation is occurring. Information field. The information field is the soul, because that's where the karmic information is, the software. And then unified field. Once again, matter fields, energy fields, transformation fields, information field, unified field. And the mechanics of creation, in scientific terms, is then defined as the self-interacting dynamics of the unified field. You can say it simple language: physical body, subtle body, causal body. Physical body made up of energy and matter, subtle body made up of mind, intellect and ego. Somewhere here, astral body, there's temporary existence, and then soul and spirit. The soul is the generator of ideas. The mind, intellect and ego is the organizer of ideas. The body is the deliverer of ideas, as is the universe. The soul is the observer. So right now, as you're listening to me, as you're observing me, you can try something. If you're listening to me, turn your attention to who's listening. You're listening to me, turn your attention to who's listening. There's a presence there. It's not your mind. Your mind is saying, when is this going to finish? I have to go to the bathroom, and is it making sense and all this. This presence is just a witness behind. You see, the body is aging. The mind is aging with experience and all, and this transforming. But that presence is timeless. Again, just listening to me, go to the listener. That presence has always been there. It was there yesterday, it was there when you were an adolescent, it was there when you were a baby, and it was the same presence. It's not in the field of time at all. As we become familiar with that presence, you'll see it is beyond birth and death. It's the witness of birth and death. It's the jiva, and then at the deeper level, it's the atman. It witnesses time, and it witnesses space-time events. So it's the observer. This is the level of the observer. The subtle body is the process of observation. How do you observe? Through the mind, intellect, ego, beliefs, all these feelings, emotions. And what do you observe? The physical body, and through the physical body, the universe. So, the soul is the observer, the mind, intellect and ego are the process of observation, the physical body and the physical world are the objects of observation. Observer, process of observation, and that which is observed. Or, you could say, experiencer, process of experience, that which is experienced. Another way of saying it is knower. Who knows? The soul. The process of knowing Where is this occurring? In the mind, intellect and ego. And the object of knowledge. What is known? The physical body and the universe. You can also call it the seer. Who sees? The soul. The process of seeing. How is it done? Through the mind, intellect and ego. And scenery. What is seen? The physical body and the physical world. Different ways of saying the same thing. Seer, process of seeing, scenery. Observer, process of observation, observed. Knower, process of knowing that which is known. Now, if you go beyond that into the spirit, then what is the spirit? It is simultaneously the potentiality for all three. Observer, process of observation, and that which is observed. The spirit is the observer, the spirit is the process of observation, and the spirit is that which is observed. And through this week, as we explore these different levels and create balance in these levels, true healing is to have balance in all these levels of existence. Environment, physical body, subtle body, and causal body. And as you have balance, integrated, we see them as one continuum of consciousness, one field of consciousness, then through that balance, we not only experience health, but health becomes the means to enlightenment. Enlightenment means fully understanding our identity as pure potentiality, as spirits that have chosen to have a material experience. We're not really human beings that have an occasional spiritual experience. It's the other way around. We're spiritual beings that are having an occasional physical experience or human experience. We are being human rather than human being. Okay, so that's the theory. That's the theory that explains Ayurveda, the science of life. And during the week, we're going to go into the details of how that happens.